Now, in the third article that we have here, from, again, Harry Martin of the Napa Sentinel, and again, research credit on this goes to Dave, our Napa Sentinel with a small s, we're going to take a look at how it continued misdoing or continued wrongdoing on the part of, the Department of Justice. This is an article from the Napa Sentinel, and let's see the dates. The Napa Sentinel from Friday, March 22nd of 1991. Skipping down, the article is headlined, Bankruptcy Scandal May Be As Big As Watergate. Skipping down in this article, and again, this is March 22nd, 1991. Now a U.S. House subcommittee is investigating the case and putting a lot of heat on the Justice Department. Attorney General Dick Thornburgh, T-H-O-R-N-B-U-R-G-H, has been placed in an awkward position because of the case, though he was not Attorney General at the time the Inslaw scandal broke. He was the man who investigated it and cleared the Justice Department of wrongdoing. Those last two sentences again. Now a U.S. House subcommittee is investigating the case and putting a lot of heat on the Justice Department. Attorney General Dick Thornburgh has been placed in an awkward position because of the case, though he was not Attorney General at the time the Inslaw scandal broke. He was the man who investigated it and cleared the Justice Department of wrongdoing. Testimony has come forward that the Justice Department under Meese pressured the bankruptcy courts to declare Inslaw insolvent, forcing the company to release its assets, including the critical software. Inslaw was once threatened if it didn't sell its company to a close Meese associate. After the threat, Inslaw's life was made miserable by the Justice Department. When Inslaw sued the Justice Department, it was awarded $6.8 million. The judge who made the award was fired and replaced with a newly appointed judge, the man who prosecuted the case for the Justice Department. Those two people were respectively, of course, George Basin and S. Martin Teal. Continuing. A second judge upheld the first judge's ruling. The House subcommittee is accusing Thornburgh of stonewalling the committee's request for hundreds of documents involved in the Inslaw case. 2 years ago, the same stalling tactics by the Attorney General's office played havoc with a Senate investigation of the same problem. But Texas Congressman Jack Brooks is putting the heat on the Justice Department to turn over its records on Inslaw. Brooks' committee controls the purse strings of the Justice Department and has more clout than did the Senate committee. Skipping down in the article, after the reappointment of the federal bankruptcy judge was halted because of the ruling on the Inslaw case, almost every bankruptcy judge that is handed the case declines to have anything to do with it. Nobody wants to touch the case, unquote, states Chief District Judge Aubrey Robinson. The last two sentences again. After the reappointment of the federal bankruptcy judge was halted because of his ruling on the Inslaw case, almost every bankruptcy judge that is handed the case declines to have anything to do with it. Quote, nobody wants to touch the case, unquote, states Chief District Judge Aubrey Robinson. According to Brooks, the Justice Department is now ready to turn over the document, states the Legal Times of Washington, D.C. The scandal touches many high officials in the Justice Department or formerly associated with the department. They include Edwin Meese, former Attorney General Richard Thornburgh, U.S. Attorney J. Stevens, S-T-E-P-H-E-N-S, Justice Department watchdog Michael Shaheen Jr., S-H-E-H-E-E-N, Gerald McDowell, Chief of the Criminal Division's Public Integrity Section, Lawrence McWhorter, M.C., capital W-H-O-R-T-E-R, Head of the Executive Office of the U.S. Attorney's Criminal Division, Bankruptcy Judge Cornelius Blackshear, B-L-A-C-K-S-H-E-A-R, North District of California Federal Judge, Judge D. Lowell Jensen, who was a former Deputy Attorney General and once chief competitor to Inslaw in California. He, of course, was Deputy Attorney General under Edwin Meese. So, taking note of the names, including Cornelius Blackshear, whose recanted testimony we looked at in the very first article. And it's worth noting here that the sorts of tactics that Justice Department has resorted to here have apparently borne fruit. Just as they obstructed the Senate Permanent Subcommittee under Sam Nunn, they are also apparently obstructing the Department, House Judiciary Subcommittee under Jack Brooks. And it's worth noting, too, that Attorney General Dick Thornburgh has recently been reported about considering to leave Department of Justice in order to run for the seat of the late Senator John Hines in Pennsylvania. One of the questions that I have is whether his musings in that direction might have something to do with his position on the hot seat vis-a-vis the Inslaw case. And bear in mind that the House Judiciary Subcommittee controls the purse for the Department of Justice. As we shall see, there has been a threat by that committee to cut off funding for the Department of Justice if they do not stop this pattern of obstructionism. It's worth noting, too, that after Judge Basin was not reappointed and S. Martin Teal was appointed in his place, quote, nobody wants to touch the case, and apparently they have been unable to find a bankruptcy judge who will deal with it. As we shall see, more than just obstructionism and intimidation has been involved in this case. Some people who have gotten involved in the case and have opposed the powers that be, so to speak, have wound up dead, as we will look at later in the broadcast. The next article, once again from the Napa Sentinel, comes from the Napa Sentinel of March 26, 1991. This article is headlined, Bankruptcy Court Examines Software Pirating Allegations Against Justice Department. This article begins, skipping down in the article. The case started out when the Justice Department bought Promise, a copyrighted software program that helps to track criminal cases throughout the United States. When friends and associates of then-Attorney General Edwin Meese attempted to buy the software company, Inslaw turned them down, and then life was made miserable for Inslaw. Within 90 days, the Justice Department reneged on their contract with Inslaw and refused to pay for the software program, even though it was using it. The Justice Department is accused by federal judges of attempting to bankrupt Inslaw and then hasten the bankruptcy court to declare them insolvent. Instead, the courts ruled that the Justice Department used, quote, fraud, deceit, and trickery, unquote, against Inslaw and awarded the small computer software company $6.8 million in damages. The case became deeper when friends of Meese began to sell the program to foreign military establishments, and the Justice Department began to provide the copyrighted material to other U.S. government agencies. A man once fired from Inslaw was put in charge of Inslaw's payments, which were never forthcoming. Another Justice Department official, who is now a federal judge in Northern California, was a direct competitor to Inslaw in California. The judge who made the $6.8 million ruling lost his job. The attorney for the Justice Department that fought against the judge's ruling was promoted to the judge's vacant position. There have been wholesale changes and firings at the Justice Department over the Inslaw case. By the way, another point, interrupting here briefly, another point I forgot to highlight in the last story was the fact that the person who was in charge with making the payments to Inslaw on behalf of the Department of Justice, and who obviously was instrumental in withholding those payments, was someone who had previously been fired from Inslaw, obviously a disgruntled former employee. Continuing with the story, the Justice Department is now under investigation by a House subcommittee, and the committee is receiving many documents to support the premise that the Justice Department has a red herring in its closet that stinks greater than Watergate. But new documents emerging in the case demonstrate a wider scandal. In an affidavit dated February 17, 1991, Ari Ben Menashe, capital A-R-I, capital B-E-N, hyphen, capital M-E-N-A-S-H-E, beginning again, in an affidavit dated February 17, 1991, Ari Ben Menashe describes his 12-year service for the government of Israel in foreign intelligence and provides an eyewitness account of a presentation to an Israeli intelligence agency in 1987 in Tel Aviv by Earl W. Bryan of the United States. Bryan is a close associate of Meese from his California days. Bryan and Meese were both in Ronald Reagan's California cabinet when Reagan was governor. According to Ben Menashe's affidavit, Bryan stated in his presence that he had acquired the property rights to the Promise computer software and that as of 1987, quote, all U.S. intelligence agencies, including the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Central Intelligence Agency, and the National Security Agency, were using the Promise computer software, unquote. Ben Menashe further states in his affidavit that Bryan consummated a sale of the Promise computer software to the government of Israel in 1987. He also further claimed that Bryan also sold the Promise computer software to Iraqi military intelligence. According to Ben Menashe's affidavit, the Israeli intelligence officer learned of the sale from an eyewitness who helped Bryan broker the sale in his office in Santiago, Chile, Carlos Carduin of Carduin Industries. That's I've seen two spellings here. Harry Martin spells it C-A-R-D-U-E-N. I've also seen it spelled C-A-R-D-O-E-N. The last couple of sentences again. According to Ben Menashe's affidavit, the Israeli intelligence officer learned of the sale from an eyewitness who helped Bryan broker the sale in his office in Santiago, Chile, Carlos Carduin of Carduin Industries. Carduin has been a major supplier of the government of Iraq of weapons and munitions. The federal government of Canada has admitted that Inslaw's promised software is currently operating in at least two federal departments, including the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. The Mounties are using the program in 900 locations in Canada. INSLAW never sold its software to Canada, Iraq, Israel, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the Central Intelligence Agency, or the National Security Agency. It also has not been paid by the Justice Department for its use, despite the $6.8 million ruling in INSLAW's favor. The Justice Department insists that the FBI is not using the PROMISE program. Yet FBI Director William Sessions and Deputy Assistant Director Keir Boyd, B-O-Y-D, have made it clear that the FBI now is unable or unwilling to provide assurances that pirated software is not included in the case management information system used by FBI field offices. And in a startling development, a man named Charles Hayes, H-A-Y-E-S, has asserted that the U.S. government has pirated the PROMISE computer program. The Justice Department has sued Hayes in the U.S. District Court in Lexington, Kentucky, seeking to compel him to return copies of computer software left on equipment Hayes' salvage business purchased from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Lexington. Hayes has publicly claimed that the salvaged equipment contained pirated copies of INSLAW's PROMISE software. So in this article, there are two major points. First and foremost, it should be noted that this scandal is now widening not only to federal but now to international proportions. According to Ari Ben-Menashe, one of the names you're going to want to remember here because we're going to come back to him next week in connection with the October surprise, Ben-Menashe states that the PROMISE software was sold not only to Israel illegally, but also to Iraq. And as we'll see, it was sold to other countries as well. Several federal agencies, including the Defense Intelligence Agency, Central Intelligence Agency, and National Security Agency are using it, apparently illegally. And quite possibly the FBI is as well. At least that possibility cannot be excluded under the circumstances. Bear in mind the name Carlos Cardwin. We're going to come back to him. And bear in mind also the name of Mr. Charles Hayes, whose salvage company purchased computers from the U.S. Attorney's Office in Lexington, Kentucky. He claims that INSLAW's pirated PROMISE software was in some of the computers he was in the process of salvaging. So the piracy of the INSLAW PROMISE software now assumes the dimensions of an international scandal. As we will see, that international scandal will include, in a big, big way, the Iran-Contra scandal itself, and that intersection will be coming up presently. Bear in mind now, the person that Ben-Menashe states was the witness to the sale of the PROMISE software to Iraq. And bear in mind also that this software may have been used during the recent Persian Gulf War to track U.S. and allied troop movements. Research credit on the following article goes to a listener. This was sent to me by this listener, and it comes from the San Francisco Sunday Examiner and Chronicle from December 30th of 1990. This is an article by Tim Kelsey, K-E-L-S-E-Y, of the London Independent, and it's headlined, "Father Fights a Cover-Up, quote-unquote, in Son's Mysterious Death." Subheaded, "Officials Refuse Aid, Arms Plot Hinted." It's Dateline London, and it reads in part, "On Saturday, March 31st of 1989, Diana Moyle, capital M-O-Y-L-E, drove to her hairdresser in Sidmouth, Devon. As she entered the salon at noon, she was overcome with a feeling of dread and collapsed in tears. At approximately the same time, in Santiago, Chile, her son Jonathan's corpse was being hauled from his bed across the floor of his hotel room to the closet and hung up by the neck from the clothes rail. The body of the 28-year-old journalist, who was in the city attending an aerospace fair, was discovered 3 hours later by a chambermaid. The next morning at 11 a.m., a police car arrived at the Moyles' small farmhouse. Tony Moyle recalls, quote, "The man said that John was dead. He said that the Chilean police did not suspect foul play. I said, did he mean suicide? He said, yes. Not my son, I said. Not my only son." Tony Moyle has never accepted that Jonathan killed himself, and for the last 9 months he has tried to prove it. Last week, his efforts were partly rewarded. The Chilean court investigating his son's death announced that the nature of its inquiry might be changed from sudden death, quote-unquote, to premeditated murder, quote-unquote. Nobody believes any longer that Jonathan Moyle committed suicide. There was an unfinished letter in his hotel bedroom in which he told a friend of his imminent marriage. Tony Moyle has dedicated himself to the search for the truth about his son's death. He has stopped working to concentrate on the investigation. He has offered a reward of about $7,500 for information. He has appointed a lawyer in Santiago to coordinate inquiries. But he is not a rich man and has not yet been able to finance a visit to Chile. Quote, "I can't let go. I've got to find out what happened. I may never do so, but I have to try," he says. A retired mathematics teacher, he knew little about the Middle East arms trade or Chile's internal politics, but he has had to learn quickly. Jonathan Moyle, a former Royal Air Force pilot, was editor of a trade magazine, Defense Helicopter World. International arms dealers have said that he was killed for stumbling on a plan by Carlos Cardoen, here spelled C-A-R-D-O-E-N, a Chilean arms manufacturer, to supply helicopters and advanced missile systems to both Iraq and Iran. Cardoen denies involvement in the murder and the claims have never been proved. A book to be published in 1991 called Unholy Babylon, The Secret History of Saddam's Wars, alleges that a senior member of the Cardoen organization twice warned Jonathan to stop making inquiries. The book is based on interviews with an Iraqi Secret Service defector. So the main elements of this article are the fact that Jonathan Moyle, a former Royal Air Force pilot and editor of a trade magazine called Defense Helicopter World, was supposedly a suicide while in Santiago, Chile. The circumstances now make it appear as if he did not commit suicide, and his father, who was investigating the killing, has been told by international arms dealers that he had stumbled on a plan by Carlos Cardoen, the same fellow who supposedly told Ari Ben Menashe about the sale of the Promise software to Iraq. This same Carlos Cardoen was supposedly behind the murder of Jonathan Moyle. Once again, the last two paragraphs. Jonathan Moyle, a former Royal Air Force pilot, was editor of a trade magazine, Defense Helicopter World. International arms dealers have said that he was killed for stumbling on a plan by Carlos Cardoen, a Chilean arms manufacturer, to supply helicopters and advanced missile systems to both Iraq and Iran. Cardoen denies any involvement in the murder, and the claims have never been published. A book to be published in 1991 called, quote, Unholy Babylon, The Secret History of Saddam's Wars, unquote, alleges that a senior member of the Cardoen organization twice warned Jonathan to stop making inquiries. The book is based on interviews with an Iraqi Secret Service defector. So we have here an apparent murder of someone, namely Jonathan Moyle, who was investigating Carlos Cardoen's dealings with Iraq. Now, Jonathan Moyle was investigating arms sales. One wonders if perhaps the real sensitive point here might not have been the arms sales, but perhaps the Promise software, which was sold to Iraq, according to Ari Ben Menashe, who, as we saw, claims that Carlos Cardoen was his source for the information and that Cardoen himself was an eyewitness to the Promise sale of the Promise software, illegally, of course, to Iraq. So this obviously goes in the category of food for thought and grounds for further research, whether it was the Promise Inslaw connection to the Cardoen dealings with Iraq that was the real source of irritation, or whether it was simply the arms, remains to be determined. I suspect, though, as we shall see, that the Promise software might have been even more sensitive than the arms sales themselves. Food for thought, grounds for further research, and more of that research will be undertaken after we come back from a musical break. Welcome back once again. Now, this evening we're doing a program called We Have Ways of Making You Sell, the Inslaw Scandal. What it involves, and it involves quite a bit, is a computer software program called Promise, developed by a company called Inslaw, that was originally sold to the U.S. Department of Justice. The U.S. Department of Justice did not pay Inslaw for its software, and not only that, but they did what they could, that is to say, the Justice Department did what it could, to drive Inslaw into a Chapter 7 liquidation, which would force them to auction off all of their assets, and this in turn would have permitted the acquisition of the software by an associate of then U.S. Attorney General Edwin Meese, and that company and that associate that was trying to compete with Inslaw was Hadron, and a member of its board of directors was a fellow named Earl W. Bryan, an associate of both Meese and Ronald Reagan. It should be noted that a number of irregularities took place, and more irregularities we shall look at in the material to come, in order to drive the Inslaw company into bankruptcy so that the Promise software could be obtained. We also looked at how the pirated Inslaw software wound up being used not only by U.S. intelligence agencies, but the intelligence agencies of a number of other countries as well. What we're going to do now is take a look at how it was that the pirated Promise software developed by Inslaw wound up being used illegally by other countries and other federal agencies. We're going to take a look now at a scheme which involved the Wackenhut Corporation, a private security outfit which often works with the U.S. government on intelligence and security matters, and a joint Wackenhut and Cabazon Indians venture, that's spelled C-A-B-E-Z-O-N, basically because the Cabazon Indians of Indio, California, are a sovereign nation, They're exempt from a number of the import-export regulations which would affect another U.S. entity, and as such, they were deemed an ideal vehicle for illegal trafficking in arms and other material, including, apparently, as we shall see, the promised software. It should be noted here that this particular Wackenhut Cabazon venture intersects not only with the Contra support effort, but quite possibly the Iran-Contra scandal as well. By the way, other articles on the Inslaw case, they all spell Anthony Pasciuto's name as Pasciuto, not Pasciulo, so that apparently was a misspelling. Pasciuto's name is P-A-S-C-I-U-T-O, not Pasciulo, so that was a misspelling in the Napa Sentinel article. The next article also comes from the Napa Sentinel. This article is called Key Witness in Inslaw Case Arrested by Justice Department as Predicted, and we will look at, in addition to the Wackenhut Cabazon venture and its connections to the Contra support effort and the pirating of the Promise software, we will take a look at how still more illicit dealing by the Department of Justice, still more threats and unusual arrangements crop up in connection with the Inslaw case. I'm going to read this entire article, and again, research credit on this goes to Dave, our Napa Sentinel, with a small s. And this is from the Napa Sentinel of April 2nd of 1991. It's headlined, Key Witness in Inslaw Case Arrested by Justice Department as Predicted, and it reads as follows. Within 8 days of signing a damaging statement against the U.S. Justice Department in the Inslaw software case, a key witness against the government has been arrested and held without bail. Michael J. Riconosciuto, R-I-C-O-N-O-S-C-I-U-T-O, was arrested Friday night and is being held without bail at Snohomish County Jail in Everett, Washington. Snohomish is S-N-O-H-O-M-I-S-H. Riconosciuto is being held without bail and no charges have been filed against him. He was arrested with two local men who had just sold him computer equipment for $1,000. The two were known drug users. Riconosciuto, according to jail officials, is being held for the U.S. Marshal's Office, not on any alleged local criminal violation. Riconosciuto and the two other persons were arrested Friday night by more than a dozen U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration agents. On March 21st, Riconosciuto, a computer software technician, filed an affidavit in the Inslaw case. In February, Riconosciuto was called by a former Justice Department official and warned against cooperating with an investigation into the case by the House Judiciary Committee. The former Justice Department official is reported to have threatened Riconosciuto with criminal prosecution if he talked about the Inslaw case. The Justice Department has been accused by a federal bankruptcy judge of stealing Inslaw's Promise software, which has the capability of tracking criminal and military movements. According to sworn affidavits, Riconosciuto was allegedly told by U.S. Justice Department officials that if he did testify in the Inslaw case, he would be criminally prosecuted in an unrelated savings and loan case and would suffer an unfavorable outcome in a child custody dispute. The threat was made by telephone, and a recording was made of the conversation, according to Riconosciuto. He indicated that two copies of the recorded telephone conversation were confiscated by federal agents when he was arrested. Riconosciuto told the St. Louis Post-Dispatch that at least one other copy remained in a secured location. Riconosciuto's testimony, along with others, claimed that the U.S. Justice Department illegally distributed Inslaw software to military and intelligence agencies in Iraq, Libya, South Korea, Singapore, Israel, Canada, and other nations. A federal judge ruled last week in Washington, D.C. that the Inslaw case be transferred from the bankruptcy court to the U.S. District Court. During the early 1980s, Riconosciuto served as the director of research for a joint venture between the Wackenhut Corporation of Coral Gables, Florida, and the Cabazon Band of Indians of Indio, California. The joint venture was located on the Cabazon Reservation. The joint venture sought to develop and manufacture certain materials that are used in military and national security operations, including night vision goggles, machine guns, fuel air explosives, and biological and chemical warfare weapons. The Cabazon Band of Indians are a sovereign nation and thus have immunity from U.S. regulations and stringent government controls. The last couple of sentences again. The joint venture, that is to say the joint Wackenhut Cabazon venture, the joint venture was located on the Cabazon Reservation. The joint venture sought to develop and manufacture certain materials that are used in military and national security operations, including night vision goggles, machine guns, fuel air explosives, and biological and chemical warfare weapons. The Cabazon Band of Indians are a sovereign nation and thus have immunity from U.S. regulations and stringent government controls. The Wackenhut Cabazon joint venture was intended to support the needs of a number of foreign governments and forces, including forces and governments in Central America and the Middle East. The Contras in Nicaragua represented one of the most important priorities for the joint venture. Last sentence again. The Contras in Nicaragua represented one of the most important priorities for the joint venture. The joint venture maintained close liaison with certain elements of the U.S. government, including representatives of intelligence, military, and law enforcement agencies. Among the frequent visitors to the Wackenhut-Cabazon joint venture were Peter Videniecks, V-I-D-E-N-I-E-K-S, of the U.S. Justice Department, of the U.S. Department of Justice, and a close associate of Videniecks, Earl W. Bryan, who served in the California cabinet of Governor Ronald Reagan and who has very close ties and business dealings with Meese. Of course, Earl Bryan, a frequent visitor, according to this information, to the Wackenhut-Cabazon joint venture, Earl Bryan, an associate of Peter Videniecks of the Department of Justice, we'll look at him again in a second, is Earl Bryan, a member of the board of directors of the Hadron Company and a business associate of Ed Meese. Continuing with the article, in connection with Reconosciuto's work, he engaged in some software work in 1983 and 1984 on the Promise computer software product developed by InSlaw but being used without payment by the U.S. Department of Justice. A federal court has awarded InSlaw $6.8 million against the U.S. Department of Justice. According to Reconosciuto's court affidavit, Bryan was spearheading the plan for the worldwide use of the Promise computer software, which was licensed and patented to InSlaw. Quote, the purpose of the Promise software modifications that I made in 1983 and 1984 was to support a plan for the implementation of Promise in law enforcement and intelligence agencies worldwide, unquote. He said that some of the modifications that he made were specifically designed to facilitate the implementation of Promise within two agencies of the Government of Canada, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police and the Canadian Security and Intelligence Service, quote, Earl W. Bryan would check with me from time to time to make certain that the work would be completed in time to satisfy the schedule for the RCMP and CSIS implementation of Promise, unquote. Bryan, without permission from InSlaw, but acting with the U.S. Department of Justice and U.S. Attorney General Edwin Meese, reportedly sold this version of Promise to the Government of Canada, according to Reconosciuto. The last sentence, a couple of sentences again. Earl W. Bryan would check with me from time to time to make certain that the work would be completed in time to satisfy the schedule for the RCMP and CSIS implementation of Promise, unquote. Bryan, without permission from InSlaw, but acting with the U.S. Department of Justice and U.S. Attorney General Edwin Meese, reportedly sold this version of Promise to the Government of Canada, according to Reconosciuto. Reconosciuto predicted his own arrest 8 days later. In his affidavit filed with the court on March 21st of 1991, he states, quote, in February of 1991, I had a telephone conversation with Peter Videniecks, V-I-D-E-N-I-E-K-S, then still employed by the U.S. Department of Justice. Videniecks attempted during this telephone conversation to persuade me not to cooperate with an independent investigation of the government's piracy of InSlaw's proprietary Promise software being conducted by the Committee on the Judiciary of the U.S. House of Representatives. Quote, or still quoting, Videniecks stated that I would be rewarded for a decision not to cooperate with a House Judiciary Committee investigation. Videniecks forecasted an immediate and favorable resolution of a protracted child custody dispute being prosecuted against my wife by her former husband if I were to decide not to cooperate with a House Judiciary Committee investigation. Last sentence again. Videniecks stated that I would be rewarded for a decision not to cooperate with a House Judiciary Committee investigation. Videniecks forecasted an immediate and favorable resolution of a protracted child custody dispute being prosecuted against my wife by her former husband if I were to decide not to cooperate with a House Judiciary Committee investigation. Again quoting, Videniecks also outlined specific punishments that I could expect to receive from the U.S. Department of Justice if I cooperated with the House Judiciary Committee's investigation. Quote, one punishment that Videniecks outlined was the future inclusion of me and my father in a criminal prosecution of certain business associates of mine in Orange County, California, in connection with the operation of a savings and loan institution in Orange County. By way of underscoring his power to influence such decisions at the U.S. Department of Justice, Videniecks informed me of the indictment of these business associates prior to the time when that indictment was unsealed and made public. One more time. One punishment that Videniecks outlined was the future inclusion of me and my father in a criminal prosecution of certain business associates of mine in Orange County, California, in connection with the operation of a savings and loan institution in Orange County. By way of underscoring his power to influence such decisions at the U.S. Department of Justice, Vinnieks informed me of the indictment of these business associates prior to the time when that indictment was unsealed and made public. Again, quoting, another punishment that there's a misprint here. Another punishment that Vinnieks promised if I cooperated with the House Judiciary Committee is prosecution by the U.S. Department of Justice for perjury. Vinnieks warned me that credible witnesses would come forward to contradict any damaging claims that I made in testimony before the House Judiciary Committee, and that I would be subsequently prosecuted for perjury by the U.S. Department of Justice for my testimony before the House Judiciary Committee. Unquote. As predicted, Reconosciuto's affidavit was filed with the court and reported in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and Washington Post. He is now being held without bail and with no charges. The Inslaw case is becoming another Watergate and involves former Attorney General Edwin Meese, a federal judge, several high officials of the U.S. Department of Justice, and even former White House aide Robert C. McFarlane, who transferred Inslaw software to Israel. Remember, McFarlane, will come back to him next week. There are so many affidavits being filed in the case, and the House Judiciary Committee is now forced to cut U.S. Department of Justice funding if they don't cooperate in supplying documents. And I would point out here again what basically happened to Michael Reconosciuto. Now, bear in mind that his official title was the Director of Research for the joint venture between Wackenhut Corporation of Coral Gables, Florida, and the Cabazon Indians. By the way, there are alternate spellings here. Cabazon here in Harry Martin's articles is spelled C-A-B-A-Z-O-N. In Inside Job, The Looting of America's Savings and Loans by Steve Pizzo, Mary Fricker, and Paul Muolo, Cabazon is spelled C-A-B-E-Z-O-N. Now, bear in mind also that Reconosciuto had testified that it was the very same Earl Bryan who was a member of the board of directors of the Hadron Corporation, which suddenly began receiving very lucrative contracts when Ed Meese, a business associate and friend of Bryan's, when he became attorney general, the U.S. Department of Justice, as well as the Pentagon and the Agency for International Development, a frequent front for U.S. intelligence activities, they all began dealing with Hadron. It was Hadron, or I'm not sure how that's pronounced, that was trying to get a hold of the promised software. Bill Hamilton was told by someone, by an associate, that, quote, we have ways of making you sell. Well, he wouldn't sell, and the pressure being put on Inslaw resulted from that. Now, bear in mind that, again, Reconosciuto was going to testify and submit an affidavit to the House Judiciary Committee about the Inslaw operation and about the joint Wackenhut-Cabazon venture. Bear in mind that the Cabazon Indians, because they're a sovereign nation, are exempt from U.S. Import regulations. And bear in mind also that a major beneficiary of this particular operation appears to have been the Nicaraguan Contras, because we're going to come back to that connection in a big way later. Bear in mind also for the former Justice Department employee Peter Videnieks, V-I-D-E-N-I-E-K-S, he testified basically that they would be favorable if he refused to cooperate, that is to say Reconosciuto refused to cooperate with the House Subcommittee investigation or the House Judiciary Committee investigation, that a long child custody dispute that he was involved in, as well as the possible prosecution of him and some business associates in Orange County in relation to a savings and loan failure, well, those would be favorably resolved. Videnieks promised that these would be unfavorably resolved if, in fact, Reconosciuto did testify before the House Select Committee, or the House Judiciary Subcommittee, I should say, and also promised that credible witnesses would come forward to contradict what Reconosciuto said, and that Reconosciuto would be indicted for perjury if he cooperated with the House Judiciary Subcommittee. Reconosciuto was then arrested and held without bail, and as we're going to see, drug charges were filed against him, and apparently the threat against Reconosciuto was made good, because we're going to be taking a look at just exactly what happened to the poor, unfortunate Mr. Reconosciuto in the very next article. So once again, this particular joint project between the Wackenhut Corporation of Coral Gables, Florida, and the Cabazon Indians appears to have been connected not only to the Contra support effort, but specifically Earl W. Bryan's involvement with this joint venture and the operation of Michael Reconosciuto in connection with that. Bear in mind, he was director of research for this joint venture and testifies to having made some modifications in the Inslaw software case. Bear in mind that this particular operation was the vehicle for the apparent pirating of the promised software by Inslaw. By the way, there is a lot of information about the Wackenhut Corporation in the book Spooks by Jim Hogan. That's a book about private intelligence agencies and security outfits and their frequent operations in conjunction with and on behalf of the federal government. It's a long chapter in there involving Wackenhut Corporation. So people who would like to follow up on the Wackenhut Corporation or would like to get background on it, the book Spooks by Jim Hogan about private intelligence agencies in this country and their work on behalf of and in conjunction with the federal government. The next article also comes to us from the Napa Sentinel, and this particular article is from the Napa Sentinel of April 5th of 1991. It's titled, House Judiciary Investigators Seek New Declaration, and on the inside it's headed, House Judiciary Investigators Go to Tacoma Jail. Now, the aforementioned Michael Reconosciuto is now being sought by people from the House Judiciary Committee. Skipping down in the article, once again, the author of this article, as is the case with all of the articles on Inslaw, is Harry Martin. The article, skipping down in the article, we read, Congressman Jack Brooks, chairman of the committee, that's the House Judiciary Committee, has accused the Justice Department of a cover-up by withholding more than 200 documents in the Inslaw case. A U.S. bankruptcy judge it ruled in 1987 that officials of the Justice Department stole the sensitive computer software used to track criminals and also military movements, quote, through fraud, trickery, and deceit, unquote. The ruling was later affirmed by another federal judge. Reconosciuto has a previous drug conviction for manufacturing PCP aboard a Seattle houseboat 18 years ago. Reconosciuto's declaration states that he was hired to modify Inslaw's promised software so that it could be sold to Canada and other customers. During the time of modification, Reconosciuto was working on a joint venture with a private security firm and the Cabazon Indians in Indio, California. The joint venture also included military equipment and biological and chemical warfare weapons for use and or sale in Central America and the Middle East. Three Indians that were opposed to these operations and who alleged that tribal money was being filtered into foreign banks were found slain execution style in Rancho Mirage. That last sentence again. Three Indians that were opposed to these operations and who alleged that tribal money was being filtered into foreign banks were found slain execution style in Rancho Mirage. No one has been arrested in the case. The sister of one of the slain men reported the Indian ties with the Iran-Contra scandal and the software modification. That report was delivered to a New York television studio 7 years ago. She is now preparing all of it in declaration form and supplying it to the U.S. House Judiciary Committee investigation. Last sentence again. The sister of one of the slain men reported the Indian ties to the Iran-Contra scandal and the software modification. That report was delivered to a New York television studio 7 years ago. She is now preparing all of it in declaration form, supplying it to the U.S. House Judiciary Committee investigation. In other related matters, another affidavit was filed in the Inslaw case, which reports that a man bought U.S. Justice Department computers and court computers for salvage and found the pirated Promise software program in the surplus computers. The General Accounting Office has expressed grave concern over the salvaged computers, noting that the U.S. Justice Department has sold surplus computers without first erasing sensitive information from the memory banks. Quote, the error may have put some informants, witnesses, and undercover agents in a life-and-death situation, unquote, the GAO states. The data could include the names of government informants, federally protected witnesses and undercover agents, grand jury proceedings, sealed indictments, confidential FBI investigations, and personal data about Justice Department employees. These computers were sold by the Justice Department for as little as $45. The man in Lexington, Kentucky, who found the pirated Promise software in the U.S. Justice Department surplus computer, also found sealed grand jury indictments. Charles Hayes, H-A-Y-E-S, was the man who bought the equipment in July of 1990 for $45. He has now been sued by the U.S. Justice Department for the return of the computers, stating that the memory bank has not been erased. The U.S. Justice Department did not go after Hayes until after he signed an affidavit about the pirated Promise software. It is not certain whether the U.S. Justice Department wants the sensitive material back or they want the computers to block them from being used as evidence against them in the Inslaw case. Hayes did return the equipment, excuse me. This was not an isolated case. Another U.S. Attorney's Office notified federal agents that, quote, again, sensitive data that could potentially identify agents and witnesses may have been lost, unquote. So there's several things to look at in this particular article. In the first place, charges eventually were filed against Michael Reconosciuto. He was charged with aiding in methamphetamine manufacture, and it should also be noted that he had a previous drug conviction. This after he disregarded the Justice Department warning delivered by Peter Vedeniak and also the promise of assistance in other regards, and he went ahead and cooperated with the House Judiciary Committee. It should be noted also that once again that Jack Brooks, the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, has accused the U.S. Department of Justice of withholding 200 documents in the Inslaw case, a pattern of legal malfeasance, or illegal malfeasance, really, which holds throughout this program and which is going to get throughout this case and which is going to get worse. It should be noted that three of the Cabazon Indians who objected to this particular venture and maintained that tribal money was being filtered into foreign banks were found slain execution style. And the sister of one of these slain men reports the pirating of the software and the entire operation as being in connection with elements involved in the Iran-Contra scandal. Note also in this connection that this fellow Charles Hayes, who bought computers for surplus and basically was salvaging these computers, he bought surplus Justice Department computers for salvage, that he found a pirated Promise software and in turn was sued by the Department of Justice for return of the computers. And this only after he had signed an affidavit maintaining that in connection with the Inslaw case. So we will take a look at more of these events and just exactly how they evolved here in just a second.